Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Hey, everybody. It's Don Jameson from That Metal Show, and you are listening to the heaviest, girthiest podcast out there, Talking Metal.
Guys, welcome to episode 461 of the Talking Metal Podcast. Wow, 461 episodes. Can't believe it. Anyways, we have two great guests on today's show. We have Don from That Metal Show joining us, a great comedian from New Jersey. He joins us on the podcast today. And we also have Mitch, formerly of Three Sides of the Coin Podcast and Dropping the Needle Podcast. He's not doing either one of those anymore. We're going to talk to him a little bit about that, but mostly we're going to talk to him about what else? Kiss. Before we get into the episode, though, a quick message from our sponsor who, you guys, please do me a favor and support Squarespace. That's the way you support what we do here on Talking Metal. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code METAL. Again, that's METAL, all caps, M-E-T-A-L. You get 10% off, and I mean, there's so many great, great offers and things going on with Squarespace. You can get a free domain name if you sign up for a year and all sorts of other great things. It's really, again, the all-in-one place to go to create your own professional website. Check them out, squarespace.com. Now, into the episode with Don Jameson and Mitch LaFon.
Mark Striegel.
John Astronomy.
The Talking Metal Podcast, coming to you from the Silver Spacecraft. I'm Bud Friendly, and now your hosts, Mark and John.
Hey guys, welcome to the Friday night Talking Metal Digital Live Show. This is John Astronomy. On the line is Mark Striegel, and all the way from Spain, from Mars Attacks, it's Victor. Hey, what's happening, guys?
We have two very special guests on the show today, Don Jameson from That Metal Show and Mitch LaFon, formerly of the Three Sides of the Coin podcast, also known for his great work with Brave Words. How you doing, Victor? What's going on there?
Doing pretty good. Hanging in here. Late night, sort of balmy here in Spain, surprisingly enough.
Balmy? What does that mean? I don't know.
Balmy. We're up in the high 50s, so it's warmer than it should be.
I'll take that.
Yeah, I love that. It's supposed to be actually 50 in New Jersey tomorrow. We'll see. Not high 50s, but 50, which I would love. You can check in with us, guys, on Facebook. It's facebook.com. My page, which is M. Striegel, John's page, Victor's page. Our friend Mitch LaFon is going to be joining us in a few minutes, so you can check in with him on Facebook. We are also on Twitter at twitter.com/talkingmetal, username talking metal. Hope to hear from you guys. We'll try to read some of your comments on the show tonight. Guys, big news. I made a donation to the... There was this guy down in somewhere or another, Texas or something, and he was basically a podcasting troll. Do you guys know about this?
No, don't know what that is.
He was trying to claim he owned the rights to podcasting, even like with a... what do you call it?
A patent troll.
Yeah, with a patent that he had done like long before podcasting even existed. And I donated money to fight this guy, and I'm happy to say that he was thrown out of court today, and all us podcasters are now free to continue podcasting without having to worry about paying some patent troll a share of our money. So that's great news. I had it all printed out, and I was going to read it to you guys, but of course I lost the piece of paper, so...
This is a subject I can actually talk hours about due to the fact that, you know, I do work in the IT field, and there are a lot of patent trolls out there, and unfortunately, there are plenty of good old boys out in Texas that are waiting to line their pockets. That's why they're trying to move all these, all of the court dates over into Maryland, which is a bit fairer, so I'm assuming that's where he was.
Yes, I think it is. I think you're right.
Yeah, they have a specific county in Texas where they approve all of these patents, and the same judge just pretty much sits there and says, okay, well now Joe Blow owes so-and-so $50 million because he's podcasting.
Interesting. Interesting stuff. Well, we don't have to worry about that guy anymore. A big shout-out to David Isaac, who is a New York guy, John. He wants to have beer with us. He's like a crazy, he's a crazy marathon runner dude. I love this guy, David Isaac. He and his son has the name my son has, Harrison, listened to the show. And David sent in a $20 donation. So thank you for that, David. And
thank you, David.
Yeah, he was happy that we turned him on to Badlands. So great band. And never too late to enjoy the music of Badlands. So thank you, David. And also, we got another letter from, let's see, where is this? Oh, yeah. Shit. Oh, we got
you looking? You got it?
Yeah, I got it. We got another email from a guy who wanted to talk about Van Halen. He is writing a book, by the way, and his name is Greg. Yeah, and he emailed me, and he's writing a book on Van Halen, the early years. And he has a blog, which I checked out, which is really cool, guys. We're going to link it through today's show notes, VanHalenRising.com. Greg, thanks for your email. It's great to hear from you. I'm glad you enjoy what we do here on Talking Metal. I just actually, speaking of Van Halen books, it's not exactly a Van Halen book, but I just finished Sammy Hagar's book. And have either of you guys read this book?
No, not yet. Although I do like Sam Hagar.
Victor, did you read it?
I have not read it, but I am on the polar opposite side of John Astronomy.
Yeah.
Not a Sammy fan.
All right. Well, I love Sammy. I think he's great. And this is a great read. Sammy, of course, played on 4 of the studio albums that Van Halen has released throughout their career. 5, if you include that live album he did with them, because in his book he reveals they recorded the whole thing over in the studio, which I thought was pretty wild, but not that wild because a lot of bands have been known to do that. And the thing that I found most interesting about this book was Sammy seems to imply that one of the main reasons he fell out of favor with the Van Halen brothers, I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but one of the biggest reasons, and I never heard this, is Cabo Wabo, that bar.
The bar.
Yeah. Huh. Now the Van Halen...
The bar.
Well, basically, the Van Halen... Exactly. They invested in it, okay? And it did well for like a year, and then it just tanked, and it was losing money. It had fallen into a state of disrepair, which was not doing good. This is the way Sammy tells it. And so while the bar was out, like not doing well, he basically bought the Van Halen brothers out and took over the whole thing on his own. And they were no longer co-owners with him. After he bought them out, basically, or got them out of being an owner. I guess it was a really complex contract. The bar suddenly, Sammy really stepped it up, and the bar suddenly started doing good and making a ton of money, you know, releasing its own tequila, the Cabo Wabo tequila, and basically went on to be this $1 million thing, just pulling in money. And the Van Halen brothers really felt that Sammy had duped them and let it go bad just to simply to buy them out, only to then, you know, make even more money by owning it solely or on his own. And they held that grudge for just literally, even when they got back together 10 years later to do that like so-called reunion tour, they were still pissed about the Cabo Wabo thing. Especially Eddie, it sounds like. So that's interesting. I never heard that. I never heard that that was
kind of a nutty thing.
Part of their falling out. But it's like they say never go into business with friends, you know? And
correct.
That seems to be what happened here. So let's get into the song Cabo Wabo off OU812.
I've been to Rome, Dallas, Texas. Man, I thought I'd seen it all. Around the world, searching every corner. Man, I thought I'd hit the world. There's a sleepy town south of the border. You go there once, you be there twice. Lots of pretty girls coming by the dozen. The white sands all make a town look nice. We crash on the beach.
Right now, guys, we're going to get into a little comedy by Don Jameson. How long have you known Don, John?
I swear that I've known Don Jameson since the early 90s when I was working in the Concourse Library.
Yeah, yeah. He's was a production guy at VH1 and MTV. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about his new comedy record, which is called Hell Bent for Laughter. And it's a funny record. Sometimes I'm hot and cold on comedy records, but this is a great record. I listened to it all the way through. We're going to get into a track right now, a comedy track off the record, and then we're going to hear from Don. It's an interview I recorded with him earlier. This is Motley, AC/DC, and My Awful Sideburns by Don Jameson.
How about Motley Crue? Any Motley fans in the house? Motley Crue! I love Motley Crue, but if you go see them live in concert, that singer Vince Neil, he sings like three words of the song, and then he puts the mic out. You gotta sing the rest of the song. If he sings any less lyrics, I'm gonna have to change the name of that band to Motley Karaoke.
Oh my God.
But I love their drummer Tommy Lee, right? Tommy Lee's a badass drummer, right? But he's also as famous for the size of his penis as I am not famous for the size of my penis. Tommy Lee's penis is longer than Inagata DeVito, okay? We've all seen the Pam and Tommy sex video, right? I love the part, yeah, you gotta respect a man who could blow the horn of a boat with his erection. Yeah. And he was still standing on the dock at the time. I couldn't even blow the horn of a big wheel with my erection. Wait, let me correct that. I couldn't even blow the horn of a Hot Wheel with my erection. And their guitar player, Mick Mars, you ever see this guy, Mick Mars, man? He's got this spinal thing where he's like all hunched over like this, man. And it sucks, right? But, you know, he can still tour, he can still play, and even if he doesn't want to, he can totally blow himself. Which makes that a really cool disease to have, right? Like, if you got cancer and you knew it would make you blow yourself, nobody would ever fucking raise money for that ever again. And now that we just talked about Tommy Lee, that's two guys in the same band who could actually blow themselves. How about AC/DC? Any AC/DC fans in the house? AC/DC? AC/DC's been playing the same three chords for the last 40 years. Angus Young's been wearing the same schoolboy outfit for the last 40 years. The only thing that stopped that band now is a B-sharp minor chord and Jerry Sandusky being released from prison. You have a son that goes to Penn State? What happened? If you watch the show, I appreciate you watching it. Thank you very much. I appreciate all your support. I appreciate you busting my balls about my sideburns on Twitter and Facebook and all that shit. I know, they're awful. I can see you looking at me like, seriously, Don? It's 2013. Unless you're going to a Civil War reenactment immediately after the show, You gotta shave those fucking things. So women say, oh, it's sexy because Hugh Jackman has them. Yeah, on me, huge jack off, pretty much. Can you guys see them in the back? Can you see the sideburns?
Yeah.
How about in the balcony? Can you guys see them up there? It looks like I'm being ear fucked by two chipmunks, you know what I mean? But my girlfriend says she likes them. I don't know if she likes them or if she just knows no other chick wants to bang me with these things. But my girlfriend likes stuff from the 70s, like, you know, big mutton chops, wallet chains, bell-bottom jeans, syphilis, disco balls, El Camino, Harry Bush. Well, I mean, no, what she does, she grooms down there because I have these sideburns so that when I go down on her, it looks like I have a full beard. People are like, have you seen that movie Lincoln yet? She's like, no, but he was between my legs last night. He emancipated like three orgasms. It was awesome. It's better than my last girlfriend. When I went down on her, it looked like I was in ZZ Top. But I don't do any really any man grooming down there, and that's weird because when I'm getting a hand job, it looks like she's stabbing a poodle to death. All right, a little poodle.
Right.
If it was metal, he'd
done. Not obsessed about penis size. But
all right, man, we'll get rolling here. Hey, this is Mark Striegel of the Talking Metal Podcast, and on the line we have Don Jameson. Don, how are you?
Hey, great to be on the podcast with you, bro.
Yeah, I know you were on once before. I think John did a solo interview with you, so I'm glad that I get the chance to catch up with you this time.
Yeah, absolutely, man. This is great. I appreciate you having me back on.
Oh, you bet. You have a great record out, which I listened to all the way through, Hellbent for Laughter. And it's a really funny record. I recommend the Talking Metal listeners go and pick this up. I want to talk to you a little bit about your whole comedy thing, as well as of course that metal show. But let's start.
Well, thank you, man. Look, when you're on Metal Blade, you gotta turn it up a few notches. I like to do comedy on the edge. You know, I don't like to hold back. And you know, if you're on a label that has a band like Cannibal Corpse, you know, they're not going to ask you to tone it down at all.
So. Right.
It was a no-brainer for everybody.
You mentioned Metal Blade, and I wanted to ask you about doing live comedy. You're obviously known as the guy from that metal show, and you're on Metal Blade, which is obviously, like you said, a very heavy metal label. When you and the routines that you do on Hellbent for Laughter, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them deal with hard rock and heavy metal music. Do you find when you're out doing the comedy circuit and you're at just like your average club in Ohio somewhere that people know you from that metal show and are expecting you to do a lot of hard rock and heavy metal jokes?
I think people are just expecting to laugh if they're in a comedy club. You know, honestly, metal and hard rock has always been a part of my life, but you know, obviously in the last 5 years, even more so than ever. So that's why there's a lot of it on this album, because you know, I want to tip my cap to all the, you know, the metalheads and the hard rockers who have supported me, but also I wanted to make it an album that just regular, you know, people who like comedy could listen to. I didn't do any real, you know, all the stuff on there is bands that, you know, pretty much your average person can relate to. And you know what, if a few people missed some of the jokes, that's okay too. But I just wanted to get the best stuff out there. And like I said, I my life is so consumed, like yours is, with this scene. It would be, you know, criminal for me not to put jokes about the bands that I love on the album.
Yeah, absolutely. And how did you, I know this is your second record with Metal Blade, but how did you initially get hooked up with them?
I think Brian Slagle just drank too much wine one time and accidentally offered me a record deal. So, of course, I immediately accepted it. And, he picked up my option again when I said I wanted to record another album. And I was going to do this album no matter what. But, you know, having Metal Blade, you know, behind me is just, you know, it's just incredible to have their support. And, just proud to have their logo, you know, stamped on the back of, you know, one of my CDs. I mean, I said, you want to call Don Jameson an asshole, that's fine with me. I don't care. Just as long as it says Metal Blade on it, I'll be pumped.
Right, right. one of the guys you poke fun at on the CD, there's a lot of them, but one of them is Mick Mars. And I know you just had him on That Metal Show on VH1, which is on my DVR. I haven't watched it. I think it actually aired last night. How is Mick in person? A lot of people talk about, oh, he's not healthy. And what was your opinion sitting down and talking with a guy?
Just a very cool, nice guy, man. Real, just down to earth, mellow. It was funny. I just saw a picture that Metal Show just tweeted out. He kind of trashed his dressing room at the show, which just made me smile, because it's just like, you know, this guy's a rock star through and through.
Right.
I think this guy just lives to play music. That's his whole thing, man. And he's not letting, you know, his disease get in the way of doing that. And it's very painful for him. But he, you know, I mean, this guy, you know, he will die with a guitar in his hands. You know, that's the vibe I get from him. Very honest, very open about stuff. You could not have been nicer, man.
You know, when you say very honest and very open, it's kind of interesting, because when they announced this farewell tour, I think there was like an interview with Vince where he said, well, Mick's not going to be able to do it much longer. And then I thought Tommy said the same thing in another interview. And then they both kind of backpedaled on that, saying, oh, that isn't the reason the band is ending. Is that something right. You spoke to Mick about?
Yeah, and he said, yeah, it's not true. You know, he said that, you know, that has nothing to do with me. He goes, I'm going to keep touring long after Motley's done. So, you know, my beef with those, not a beef, but, you know, my take on the whole thing is like, you know, you show me the band that said this is our final tour that actually did it, you know, and I'll believe it when I see it, you know. And I talked with Mick about that, too. We broke each other's balls on the show, and we talked about it in the green room before. You know, it's all good. I don't think they're doing it. I don't think they're doing it to sell more tickets, to charge a higher price. But every band, the same thing happens, man. They get out of the loop for about a year. They go, oh, my God, nobody cares about us anymore. Someone comes out of the woodwork with a lot of money, and boom, there they are again, back on the road. So I just said, you know, hey, look, I don't care if it's the final tour. I'm going to go see it. And then if there's another final tour after that, I'll probably go to that too. I'm not going to worry about, oh, they said this was the last one, so I can't go to the next one. I'll go to the next one too. It doesn't matter to me.
Right on. Well, it should be a good tour with Alice Cooper opening up. That Alice has been on That Metal Show too, right?
Yeah, a couple times. And, yeah, he's just one of those guys, man. You know, you've interviewed a million guys, man. I don't know who does it to you, but he's just one of those guys, besides also being just one of the sweetest guys in metal. For me, being such a huge Coop fan, when he comes on, I still feel like I'm like a high school girl fawning over like the captain of the football team.
Right.
When he comes on, I'm like all giddy, and like even Eddie's like, you know, you take over the interview, because, you know, you get so charged up when he comes on. So can't wait to have him back again.
Excellent. I know you love a lot of the classic hard rock and heavy metal bands, but what about like newer bands? And when I say newer, I mean within the past like 10 to 15 years. What bands out of that bunch are some of your favorites?
Well, I guess, you know, Amon Amarth is pretty much, you know, in the last 10 years, the band that I've really just grown to love and have really followed closely. And, you know, they're label mates of mine, so I've gotten to know the guys in the band. I've done, you know, a bunch of events with them. So, you know, they're definitely, you know, a big one for me. I really love those guys. In the last 10, you know, there's a band that I really love. I'm sure that you know, but this might be kind of a stretch for some of the listeners, but there's a band called Catatonia of Sweden.
Right.
That I really love, who kind of, they actually have a good following in the States now. They hadn't toured here forever, but those guys do sort of a real heavy kind of ambient.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm more avant-garde, if you will.
Yeah. So, I like that kind of stuff. And, of course, you know, I talk every season of, not that they're new, but, you know, I always like to throw out a mention just because you said avant-garde, but Typo Negative, of course, you know, I always give them a shout-out. But, yeah, I know that they're not new, but
right.
I'm just trying to come up with some other new stuff. Obviously, Danko Jones we've talked a lot about on the show, and we've been able to have him on. But, like, new, you know, I really like Scorpion Child a lot.
Cool.
And I actually just, I just heard this band, Mount Salem. They're a real doomy, gloomy band from Chicago with a female vocal, and I really kind of love them.
Excellent. And what about your band, Gunfire and Sodomy? What are you guys currently up to?
We're just, you know, just taking a break right now, man, because between filming that metal show and getting my CD out there and all that stuff, I'm just, like, kind of crazed right now, and also getting on the road. You know, Jim, Eddie, and I are heading out on the road to do a bunch of gigs together, too. So, you know, we're just we're putting that to the side for a little while. But, yeah, that's been a lot of fun, the acoustic death metal, because, you know, serial killers need a favorite band, too.
Right on. So when you're out doing the comedy stuff, doing comedy clubs, what are some of your favorite cities to visit?
I think my stuff, you know, really works good in, like, blue-collar places, you know. So, you know, Kansas City and Baltimore and, you know, Chicago, Detroit, places like that, man. You know, I'm not a hip alternative comic. I'm a 47-year-old guy who wears, you know, jeans and a concert shirt, and that's and I go on stage and tell jokes. So, yeah, I think that I kind of appeal to the blue-collar crowd. Not blue-collar in the sense of, like, Larry the Cable Guy blue-collar, but
right.
Just, you know, like, hey, man, you know what? I've been free. I'm a plumber. I've been working all friggin' week. You know, I've been busting my ass. My wife's been, you know, breaking my balls to take her out. So Friday night we're going to go out and see some fucking comedy, and, you know, I just want to laugh, you know, and that's the kind of crowd I love. You know, I just pack as many jokes into a headlining set as I can, and, you know, if there's three or four you don't like, I'm gonna pound you with 10 more, and you're definitely gonna leave getting a lot of laughs.
Right.
That's how I work as a comic. I'm a blue collar worker. I work hard. I pack in as many laughs as I can. You know, I want people to have a good time, and I want to have a good time too. And I like a really playful crowd too, which is why I recorded my album, you know, here in Jersey at this particular club, because so much atmosphere and characters and crazy stuff go on in this club, and I wanted that to be a part of the album.
Great. Can you tell us the name of the club?
Oh, yeah, it's called Uncle Vinny's Comedy Club in Point Pleasant. And I recorded four shows. The album's basic. It's like 96% one show and then a few jokes from some of the other nights. But, you know, like a woman drops. It's a BYOB comedy club.
Which, yeah, I heard you say that on the record, yeah.
Yeah, and like a woman drops a bottle of wine and it breaks on the ground. I left that in.
Yeah.
You know, I left a lot of that kind of stuff in because a lot of comedy albums don't have a lot of personality. It's the comic tells a joke, you hear this huge laugh, and then he tells another joke and then you hear another huge laugh, and then there's another, you know what I mean? And there's nothing else going on. So that comic could be in Kansas City, they could be in Fort Lauderdale, they could be in New Mexico. You have no idea. You know, I wanted to leave some of the personality of the room in there.
And, you know, there's such an art to delivering stand-up comedy, and obviously you have it down. Who did you study and who did you learn from?
Andrew Dice Clay. That's my, you know, he's the reason that I stepped on stage for the first time. And crazy to even think that, you know, 12 or 13 years later, you know, I met him and Jim Florentine was opening for him at the time, and Jim couldn't do, you know, a handful of gigs, so he recommended me, and then I started opening for Dice, and, you know, and here it is now, 8 years after that Dice is one of my best friends, and I still go on the road and tour with him, and I've gone all over the world with him doing comedy, so it's, you know, it's like crazy shit, you know, it's like John working with Ace.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, your hero, like, likes you, and, you know, wants to work with you. It's just you know, it totally blows my mind out.
I've seen that happen over and over again where it's like, I mean, even like Ozzy's assistant is this guy, Tony, who is just like this crazy Ozzy fan who ended up
right,
being
yeah,
his assistant.
Yeah.
You know? Which is very similar with Ace and John, for that matter.
Cool. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and I do, I like the dirtier comics. I was always a fan of Pryor and Carlin and Kinnison, but Dice was always number one for me. But I also like the clean guys. Look, for me, if you're funny, you're funny. That's all I care about. I don't think, like, if I watch a comic, he's funny, and I laugh the whole time, and I go, oh, he was clean. Doesn't matter. You know, when you're a comic, you got to do what makes you happy. And you got to write about what you know, which is why I tell a lot of dick jokes.
Yeah, like the apparently your erection, not even big enough to blow the horn of a Hot Wheel. That was great.
No, sadly.
So you mentioned writing jokes. And you know, a lot of people outside the comedy world might not realize, because it always sounds so effortless when you're up there doing it. But you must spend time developing these jokes and working these jokes out. I mean, how do you come up with this stuff?
It's just stuff from real life. You know what I mean? It's all just you know that's I had 14 years to sort of hone and write my first album, Live and Hilarious, and I had like 2.5 to do this one. But in a lot of ways, this one's way more focused, and you know, all the stuff is about my life in the last 3 years. So that's why I think this album is a million times better. It's just way more focused. But yet again, like if you listen to both albums, you're like, some of the jokes that, like, seem very similar, and it's because it's like, well, you know, these are the things that are interesting in my life that I like to talk about just in different ways. You know, like AC/DC, they play the same 3 chords on every album, but somehow they make different albums and everyone kicks ass. So that's how I am as a comic. You know, I'm good at 3 things and I just stick with them.
Right on, right on. Cool. Well, the album again is Hellbent for Laughter. It's out on, or will be out on Metal Blades, right? It's not out.
Yeah, March 18th. March 18th. It comes out. And my last album, again, thanks to, definitely thanks to a big part to, you know, all the rock fans out there, went to top 10 on Billboard. So I'm really hoping, you know, we get up there on the charts for this one too, and top 20 on iTunes. And and I'm really proud of this one, man. So I appreciate you giving me the time to get the word out on it.
Yeah, I think it's a great record. I mean, you even make a joke about it going on the Billboard charts and how the name was so similar to, what was it,
Louis C.K. now called Hilarious at the same time that I put out Live and Hilarious. So I think a lot of people downloaded my album accidentally. So.
Yeah, well, I doubt that, but it makes for a good joke on the record, definitely.
Yeah, and also, you know, I was going to wait for him to name his next album and then name mine something really similar to it, but I don't think he's making one right now, so I went with Hellbent for Laughter.
Right on. Cool, and before we let you go, just, John mentioned, as we were leading into the interview here, that he's known you over 20 years, and I definitely remember you from the production world of VH1 and MTV Networks. What did you actually do before you were out there doing comedy and that metal show production-wise at MTV Networks?
Yeah, as a long-haired kid coming out of college, man, I was lucky enough to score an internship, and then my first job was like in the talent department at MTV. So I used to do talent booking, and then I was very involved with, they had a stand-up comedy show at the time. I got involved in booking that. That's how I really, that started stoking my fire to get up on stage and start telling jokes. And then I was, a writer and a producer for many years over there. And, it was a killer job, but, I knew I wanted to do other stuff. But, yeah, John, it was, when you met another guy with long hair, like when I met John and he ran the tape library, you always sort of gravitate towards each other, And I knew he was an artistic guy. He knew I was a creative guy.
Right.
So we always sort of, vibed on that. And, but I did that for a long time, man. And it was a killer job. But, now MTV's, just like pregnant 16-year-olds. So.
Yeah. What was it, half-hour comedy hour? Was that what the show?
Yeah, the old comedy shows, yeah. So, but I gave a lot of, big people their first break, man. I'm very proud. Kevin James, the King of Queens, and Jon Stewart, and Caroline Ray, and Jay Moore. So, that was, I'm very proud of all that. But, obviously, again, I wanted to get up and do it too and, make my own little mark. And, obviously, my life's been dedicated to hard rock and metal, and I always hoped that those two worlds could someday collide, so here we are.
Excellent. Great. Well, pick up the album, guys. It comes out on March 18th, Hellbent for Laughter, Don Jameson, and, of course, you can on that metal show on VH1 Classic. So, Don, thanks so much, man.
Yeah, thanks. And everybody also, keep supporting Talking Metal, the podcast, man. You guys do amazing work, and hope to get you guys back on TV too, man. It's been too long.
Oh, thanks, man. We keep trying.
Yeah, well, we're gonna get you back there, man, because the scene needs it. There's a lot of support out there for it. So, everybody keep supporting Talking Metal, and I'll talk to you again soon, man.
Cool, great. Thanks, Don.
Thanks, Mark.
What you just heard was a little Don Jameson of That Metal Show. Check out his new record. It is Hellbent for Laughter. Big thanks to John for joining us on this episode of Talking Metal. Up next, we have another interview with Mitch LaFon. who recently left the Three Sides of the Coin podcast. But we're going to talk to Mitch about that and a bunch of other stuff. So let's get into a little music that Mitch put together, and then we'll talk to Mitch. Can you tell us what we're going to hear, Victor?
Absolutely. This comes off of the A World with Heroes Kiss tribute album that he put together a few months back. This is Goodbye, which actually features Bob Kulick, Bruce's brother, on lead guitar, who I believe played on the original.
I think so. Right, John?
Probably on Paul's solo album. I mean, there were different guitarists, so I'm not sure it was on every track, but I would bet that he did play on that one.
All right. Cool. Let's check it out, and hopefully we'll have Mitch on the line when we get back.
Ain't it funny how the time slips away? Now I'm leaving and I wish I could stay. People wonder why they don't get a chance. They wait for music but they don't get a chance.
That was Goodbye, coming off of the A World with Heroes tribute album.
Mitch LaFon is on the line with us. Mitch, how are you?
I'm doing well, actually. Doing very well.
I kind of
figured
that's
free these days.
Yeah, I kind of figured that was a good song to bring you in on, since it's A, off the record you put together, and B, it is Goodbye. You recently said goodbye to Three Sides of the Coin.
I did. Yeah, I did. And, sometimes in life you have to make decisions that are difficult but needed. And this one for me was needed. But, if I can just talk quickly about that tribute album.
Absolutely.
That was also needed. And that one, so far it's raised over $30,000 for the palliative care center locally that it was supposed to. It's for where my wife's father passed away and the whole thing. And it was such a great experience. Every musician on there donated their time, donated their talents. And it's just nice to see that the rock community can come together, much like we're doing here tonight on this thing. I mean, here we are, four people in four different parts of the world. We come together to talk rock, and it's a beautiful thing. It really is.
Absolutely. And that song that we just heard, Goodbye, actually features Bob Kulick. Can you tell us, did Bob play on the, we know he played on Paul's solo record, but did he play on that actual song on the solo record?
That's a good question. You mean on Paul's 78 solo record, did he play on that song?
Right. Yes.
I don't know the answer to that. I'm assuming yes, and that's why, it's Tommy Denander, who has this band Impera out of Sweden. And he contacted me through Skype and said, listen, I heard about you, this Kiss project you're doing, and I want to donate the song. And Bob played on it. And as far as I recall the conversation going, it was Bob recreating a solo he had done from 78. So
nice.
Yeah, I can't give you a 100% answer, but I'm pretty sure that that's the answer. And it's a great solo, and it's great to have Bob on the album. I mean, I have if you look at that album, it's 6 degrees of Kiss geekdom, right? I mean, I've got people who wrote, I had people who played, I had people who covered. There's all kinds of strange stuff. I mean, I have that song Outer Space, which showed up on Ace Frehley's Anomaly album, but it's a cover song. People don't know that. We got Bob Kulick, we got Kevin Valentine. It was a great way to stretch my little Kiss geekdom to this album and see who I could get.
Absolutely, Mitch. What a great accomplishment, and congratulations for raising so much money for such a great cause. And
still raising.
Just wanted to. Oh, excellent! Absolutely. And boy, we are just excited to have you on our show, and we really thought your show was great, and we followed your career, you know, throughout, because we've known your work with Brave Words, and I've known that one of the coolest things is that you interviewed Gene like back in the day, so like before any of us, you know, even thought about doing interviews. How did that come about?
This is like when you were 12 years old or something, right?
11 years old, June 9th, 1980. Yeah, listen, I've always been very, what's the word for it? Go-getter-ish in a sense. You know, I'm a go-getter, and I was sitting at home enjoying Dynasty and enjoying all these albums, and I looked on the back, and it said Ocoin Management, New York. So I phoned the New York operator and got a phone number. They gave it to me, because that's what people did. And I phoned, and they said, hello, Ocoin Management. And I said, can I have an interview with Kiss? And they said, yeah. I went,
it's amazing.
Oh, well, that was easy. And they had offered me Paul Stanley and all that. And you know, I went and talked to my mom. My mom was doing some freelance reporting for CBC Canada and Denmark's radio. So she had access to actual recording equipment and stuff. And I said, listen, I got an interview with Kiss. Can you drive me to New York? And most moms would say no, but she said, yeah, okay, sure, no problem. You know, like, you know, it was very surreal. And then the Kiss office called back and said, oh, you know what? Paul Stanley's not available. Would it be okay if you spoke to Gene? And I was just like, sure. Why not? Anyway, long story short, my mom drove me to New York. We got to Ocoin Management. I wrote all the questions for her because she had no knowledge of Kiss. She went in and spoke to Gene for about 12 minutes. She comes out, and you can hear it on the tape because I put both parts up on YouTube. She says, my son has a few questions for you. Would you mind? And he was so gracious. I mean, here he comes out to the lobby, no makeup, big leather coat on, brown leather coat, brings me to this office, and literally from the top of the ceiling to the bottom of the floor, every single wall covered in gold records. And he was pointing them out going, that's from Norway, that's from Sweden, that's from Canada, that's from France, that's triple platinum, that's double platinum. And you know, and they had these leather chairs. I mean, I was 11 years old. These chairs, you could have sworn that I was in some kind of like Jack the Giant Slayer movie. These chairs were humongous. And I sat in them, and he sat right next to me face to face, and he answered every question I had. And he didn't go, oh, you stupid kid, or all right, get out of here. Every question. And of course, at the end of the interview, Gene says to my mom and I, because she was in the room, he says, would you like to go for lunch? And my mom said, she said, no, we've taken too much of your time.
Wow. Man, Mitch, that is an insane story. And I bet that was at 645 Madison. Was that correct?
Yes, that is the address.
That is amazing.
That's,
and
that's a great
Mitch,
story.
That is an unbelievable story. And
I posted that video on YouTube. You can listen to the audio.
That is so cool. I will definitely check that out. I never realized how cool that story was. I knew that you had interviewed him, but I didn't know that you traveled all the way to New York to do that.
Yeah.
And the cool thing with your mom and everything. You know what? And not to try to jump on this, but I have a very less cool thing, but you will appreciate it. In 1986, my dad was in New York on business, and at the time I lived in Pennsylvania, but we came out for the trip, and my mom and I went to 655 Madison, which was, you know, down the road, and went to Glickman and Marks, and people who worked there gave us an Asylum tour book and a couple of posters, and that was a great, great experience for me. But nothing even comparing to what your experience was.
Yeah,
but a similar thing.
Very similar. And you know, what was great about this is that this was just after Peter had left and before Eric had been announced. So when I asked Gene, amazing, who's the new drummer, they said, oh, we know, but we're not telling you. Wow. So that was a very in-between moment. And then after that, you mentioned Glickman and Marks. For about 3 years after that, Gene, through Gene's word, had Kiss Christmas cards sent to me. And the address would be Glickman and Mark. I still have them downstairs. And, you know, people ask why I'm such a Kiss fan. I mean, when somebody touches you on a personal level like that at such a young age, when they should have told you, get the hell out of here, young kid, you become loyal and you have an appreciation that people can't understand. And people say to you, you know, why do you like the Unmasked album? I mean, he gave me a promo copy of the Unmasked album.
Wow.
I didn't know what promo copies was. It was gold stamped. You know, they don't do that anymore, but it was gold stamped. And you go, well, of course you come home at 11 years old and you have this gold stamped Unmasked album. You play it until the grooves run out and you go, that's my favorite album. And you forget about music. You just go, it's got this moment in time. And I still love that album to this day. And I cringe when I hear people say, oh, it's too Sarah Syrupy. And it's like, no, it's a great album.
It is a great album. I think it's a great pop record. You know, it wasn't quite as hard as they were, but the songwriting, you can't beat it. I mean, the songs are so well crafted on that record.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Now, when you run into Gene, because you've obviously had dealings and run-ins with him since, you know, that day so many years ago, does he remember, do you remind him, hey, I'm the kid who came down to New York to interview you, and does he have any recollection of that?
You know, not really. They gave me this letter that for a few years I could go backstage and hand this letter to a security guard, and they would get me a backstage pass and that. I don't think it was really done through Gene, but I met him at the convention in Montreal in 95. And I said, hey, I did this interview with you, and I had it on CD and stuff. And he said, oh, thank you, and took it. And that was about it. And I saw him again, years after that, probably after the reunion tour. And I've mentioned it, and it's like, oh, well, you know, I see a million people. I don't think he recognizes me now. After I did this Kiss tribute album and I went to see them this summer, I think I got a sort of I know who you are. I mean, Paul certainly vocalized it. He said, you're the guy who did the tribute album for your dad. And I went, no, for my father-in-law. And that was the extent of that conversation. So I think they got to know me for that. But I don't think it was for the interview. But I'll tell you, I was out in the studio in Burbank doing something with L.A. Guns and sitting there with Tracy Guns. And he goes, aren't you the kid that did that interview when you were 11? And I mean, this was 1997. And he goes, wow. And I go, yeah. And that led to a conversation, and that led to a relationship with the guys in LA Guns. And quite frankly, it led to what I do today, because through that, you know, Tracy would say, hey, this is Mitch. Have you met him? He's done this. And then that person would, and you know how it is in the rock world. Once you know one person, it sort of just blossoms and you get to know. And that's how, over the years, I've gotten to know all these different rock stars, and I got to do all this stuff for Brave Words. And it all started with that interview, quite frankly.
Very cool, Mitch.
Yeah.
So you're still doing work with Brave Words. We see interviews that you do pop up on Brave Words. And
yeah.
As far as podcasting goes, you've announced that you're no longer doing the Three Sides of the Coin podcast. And
correct.
The other podcast, Dropping the Needle, you're done with that too, I assume, right?
Well, yeah, unfortunately, one goes with the other, right?
Right.
It was the same three guys, and so whatever issues we had that couldn't be resolved obviously apply to both podcasts. It's unfortunate, but I was really of the opinion that to grow an audience, you got to give the audience what they want, and I really felt that interviews is what audiences wanted. Now, listen, you can't have interviews every week. First of all, there's just not guests every week, and there's not opportunity every week. But when the opportunity arises, I think you need to jump on them. And there are a few guests that we passed on simply because it was decided that we should not do an interview that week. And I was of the opinion that if there's three guys talking about Kiss, you know, and you're telling the story about Hot in the Shade, well, that's cool. But at the same time, if you have a guy who was there and
that's
he saw
cooler.
Something, well, that's even cooler. And so they'd say, well, you know, we've done three in a row and blah, blah, and we need to take a break. And it's like, well, you know, if we can do 10 in a row, then let's do 10 in a row and take that break. I mean, there's always a moment to sit down and say, Carnival of Souls is a great album because, or Unmask is a bad album because, but getting the guy who was in the studio is not an opportunity that's always there. And some of the guests were very clear with me, you know, because I did not all, but I did some of the booking for the guests. They'd say, Mitch, I need to have this done by whatever, April 1st. And if it's not done, then, you know, I can't do it. So I felt a sense of urgency in getting some of them done, which was not felt by everybody. And so, you know, it really was, to me, it was important to get that done for the fans. And since I can do it anyway, I can do these interviews one-on-one. I just did one with Richie Wise, who was the producer of Kiss and Hotter Than Hell. I've put it up on my Facebook. I've sent it out on my Twitter. I sent it over to Kiss Asylum, and I sent it over to Brave Words and so on. And they'll most likely run it. I mean, most of my stuff gets picked up anyway, so it'll still get out there. It'll still be propagated. So why not, right? And
right.
I think the interview I did with Richie is fantastic. I mean, I said to him, "Are you embarrassed by Hotter Than Hell?" And instead of saying, "Shut up, Mitch," he goes, "Yeah." you know.
I saw that, and I was going to use that as a teaser to tell people that. Richie Wise says he is, quote, embarrassed, but we're not going to tell you why. You got to go listen to the interview to find out.
Yeah, go listen, because he does go on for another 2 or 3 or even 5 minutes explaining why that product he's embarrassed. I mean, he told me, "I don't want to talk about that album." And I said, "Well, what do you mean you don't want to talk about that album? It's the 40th anniversary." And he goes, "No, I'm embarrassed." And, you know, when you've worked with Kiss and you've put together two of their greatest albums and you're telling the world, "I don't want to talk about one of these albums because I'm embarrassed." That's kind of interesting, right?
Right.
Certainly more interesting than whether or not Mitch LaFon finds Hot in the Shade to be a good Kiss album.
Now, the interview that you mentioned, so it's up on YouTube, but will you be podcasting, you know, over iTunes and with an RSS, or are you just happy putting stuff up on YouTube?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I'm happy putting the stuff up on YouTube, but I'm happier when the Kiss sites and Brave Words for other interviews, you know, when I interview Buck Cherry or Metallica or whatever, I'm happy when those guys put it out there. I looked into the podcasting thing, and it really seems like a massive headache, to be perfectly frank.
Yeah.
But listen, I'll send the audio over to you guys if you want to put it up. I have no problem. I'll send you the MP3. That's not a problem.
Well, maybe we should talk about that at another time, because we're trying to kind of turn Talking Metal into like this whole podcasting family. But that's a discussion for another time. But I think the thing that's nice about the podcasts are that you don't have to go to YouTube, and you know it comes right to your phone or your iPad, and you can listen to it on the bus or in the car on the way to work.
No, I agree. It's exceptionally user friendly, and I got to consider it. I mean, for, you know, some of these interviews are done for work, and some of these interviews are done for my pleasure, and so I got to sort of balance out how much time and effort I want to put into all of this. But I'll do my best. I'm going to look into it. Is it expensive?
Okay,
cool. Is it complicated?
I think it's complicated. I don't think it's real expensive, but I do think it's kind of complicated. But Victor, you know more about it. Is it complicated?
Once it's set up, it isn't too bad. The hardest thing is sort of giving birth to the baby. But after that process is done, and if you have everything automated, it's pretty simple to keep in check. It's just you got to be very sort of regimented and and make sure that you update stuff when you're supposed to. And that's about
it. Is there a rule for how many podcasts a week you're supposed to do, or can you just?
You can do them whenever you want.
Yeah. Okay. I'll look into it. But until then, I hope fans go to YouTube and go, you know, or they go look at Brave Words and they find the interviews, because it's not just all Kiss. I mean, I've interviewed, you know, Rob Halford and David Coverdale and the guys from Metallica. And you know, if you Google Mitch Lafon, there's about 70,000 search results that come up. So there's been about a good 20 years of interviewing. In fact, you know, I know John works with Ace. I've interviewed Ace twice. I just threw those two up on my Facebook because somebody was asking, where can I read them? So I Googled it, found it, and put them up.
Very cool.
Excellent.
I wanted to tell John a quick thing about his Ace. Last Ace interview for Anomaly, he phoned me while he was mattress shopping.
That is classic Ace. That is classic Ace.
You know, and I'm like, yeah, Ace, tell me about Anomaly. And he goes, hold on. Is that queen size or king? And he goes, yeah, Mitch, what were you saying? It's like, really?
That's
you know, he is funny. The funniest thing about Ace is that he could be like dead asleep at like 6 a.m. And there have been times where we'd be out on the road and I would wake him up, give him a cup of tea, and, you know, he'd go from a deep sleep to a good radio interview. And I don't know anyone else who can do that. But on the other hand, he does funny things like that, like, you know, do interviews while doing other things. Even the Eddie Trunk interview he did the other day.
In a Shell station or something.
He was at a gas station. And I talked to him right before that. He goes, John, you know, I'm on the way to, I just dropped off some guitars. And what do you think I should do? I said, well, maybe you should just pull over like somewhere and do the interview instead of drive or try to make it. Just why don't you just pull over for a second? And that's what he did. But
my favorite part of that interview is when the police sirens go by and Eddie Trunk goes, oh, it sounds like New York. He goes, oh, well, Vegas is pretty rough, you know. Or something like that.
Yeah, I flew out the very next morning to Vegas and we were in the studio and it was really fun. But yeah, Mitch, those are funny, great stories. And I'm going to definitely tonight listen to both of those interviews. And I had joined Ace's team a little after that, basically after Anomaly came out. And I think that Frank was working with Ace at that point. So
Munoz.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I joined kind of like Frank actually is the guy that brought me into the team, because basically what happened is that Frank and I had kind of had, we had been acquainted, and then he said I could help out on a few gigs, and then he had some type of family emergency, so then Ace said, well, John, while Frank is out doing his thing, can you fill in for him? And then it sort of just stuck, so that was that.
Yeah, and you know, we had Frank on the Three Sides thing, and it was a great conversation. Fans dug it, and, you know, there, back to my point, fans dig interviews.
Correct. Well, that's what I wanted. I'm sorry, Mark. I wanted to chime in before Mitch and say that Mark and I know this because, I mean, we've done, you know, 460 some Talking Metal episodes. And yeah, you know, sometimes the listeners like to hear Mark and I chat about various things. But the ones that do better with the amount of downloads are obviously the ones where we're interviewing someone and, you know. Yeah, we're happy that people sometimes like to hear us chat, but the bulk of the people want to hear the interview. So I agree with you that if, you know, if I have the choice between listening to, you know, a bunch of friends talk about, you know, how The Elder was recorded versus talking to the engineer who recorded The Elder, I'd rather talk to the engineer or rather listen to that, you know?
Well, that's it, you know, and if you notice, there's an interview I did that I put up on YouTube of me talking to Alan Schwartzberg, the drummer,
right,
who played on The Elder as a ghost and then played on Animalized as a ghost. And he was poo-pooed as a guest. They said, no, we don't want him. Not interesting.
Wow.
And I was like, huh, okay, well, I'll just talk to him alone then. You know? And I don't know.
I'd rather hear that because here's the thing. I just as one of these Kiss geek things. Like, I would never understand, like, why wouldn't Eric Carr be the guy playing on it, and why would they get another guy? And I'd love to hear that. That's, to me, something I would like to hear.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me. And not only why is Eric Carr not playing, but how do you go in there in that mental space as that drummer, like as Alan, going, do I have to sound like him? Do I have to sound like myself? Does that whole preparation? I find that interesting.
Definitely.
Okay.
Now, on one of the last episodes you guys did I might be imagining this, but didn't you guys mention that somebody was bumped, that you were going to interview?
Yeah, we did. And the person was absolutely bumped because we had scheduled him for that Tuesday. And, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame thing blew up. And that was one where I agreed we probably should get on there and talk about that, because that was sort of big news. And talking about it 3 weeks after the fact wouldn't make sense. So, yeah, we bumped somebody. And they still haven't rebooked him. And so I don't know if it's courteous to say who it is, so maybe I shouldn't.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
You know.
Now, you've done so many interviews through the years. You know, we've spoken a lot about Kiss so far today, but who are some of your all-time favorite interviews outside of the Kiss world?
Oh, easy answers. First of all, Rob Halford of Judas Priest. I've interviewed him 2 or 3 times. One time we were up in his hotel room in Montreal, and we sat there for an hour and had this long interview. He's just absolutely so kind, so forthcoming, will answer anything, will answer it in detail, will answer it with anecdotes. And, he's just really, really nice. And he's also very professional. He doesn't give you yes, no answers. You ask him a question, even if he's heard it a million times, he'll give you an answer that you can use. Who else? Brett Michaels also is great. He has his own spiel that he wants to get out. You know, he's got his script that he wants to get out, but that's great. You just say, "Hey, Brett, tell me about," and half an hour later you go, "Thank you," and you turn off the tape, because he gets it all out there. Who else has been really great? Of course, interviewing Gene that first year. Eric Singer of Kiss is another great interview, because I've interviewed him, I think, 3 times, and every time the conversation has gone for about 4.5-5 hours. I mean, the last one, I think I started at 9:30 at night, and at 2:30 in the morning, I was still going. He's like, "Oh, I'm watching the Lakers and ordering Thai food," and he's still going and going, and he answers the Kiss questions, and then he starts going off on talking about other stuff, and he's just very engaging. And the fact that he would spend 4 hours on the phone with you and not say, "Look, buddy, I got 15 minutes, I'm out," is just really appreciated. Eric is the nicest guy, and it really bothers me when I see people hassle him online. And forget the whole Kiss thing. He's a real great person, you know?
Yeah, I've always been a fan of him from some of the early stuff that he did. And I remember him from the Paul Stanley solo tour. I thought he was great. And he's always, in my opinion, been a cool guy. And I, as a drummer, I love to listen to him play. And I like to hear his interpretation of Peter's parts on some of the old tunes.
Yeah, absolutely. And he does them great. I mean, he's well-rounded. And it's funny, as soon as you say that he's well-rounded and plays Peter's parts well, people go, "Oh, you're hating on Peter and you're hating on..." No, I'm not. I'm just appreciating Eric for being a really competent drummer, you know?
Correct.
Another guy was Kirk from Metallica. When I went to interview him, I was sick as a dog that day. I mean, I was about to collapse, and I just kept saying, "It's Metallica. Get out of bed and get there." And they were so nice. They were backstage at the Bell Center in Montreal. And I was like, do you want this? Do you want a water? And answer all the questions. And, no, they said, "You got 10 hard minutes." And he's like, "Don't listen to that. When you're done, you're done." And I had a Scorpion CD that called Scorpion's Gold that at the time was only selling in Canada. And he's looking at it, goes, "Oh, can I have that? That's so great. They can't buy this here." And he was just interested in not just Metallica. He was interested in the person. And, that's great. You got to love people like that. Another guy that gets a lot of heat is Jeff Tate. I've interviewed Jeff Tate probably 15 times, and he's just always been super great to me. Always been super great. And he always goes, Mitch, I love talking to you because it's not an interview. It's a conversation. And I love doing conversations. You know?
Excellent.
Yeah.
Cool. Victor, not to shut you out, you got some questions or a question for Mitch?
Just one name to throw out there for Mitch. And this is something that we've discussed in the past. Ansley Dunbar.
Yeah, the drummer that could almost was on Revenge.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they actually, before they settled on Eric Carr, they had, Eric Singer, for Revenge, they had tried out five guys. You know, Kevin Valentine played on that, and then they had tried out Ainsley, and boy, they tried out a couple more. It's in an interview. I did a Kiss Revenge series a couple of years ago, and all this came out in it. But yeah, can you imagine if had Ainsley ended up either in Kiss or recording the Revenge album? I mean, history would have turned right then and there.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was in those interviews you actually uncovered that, I believe it was you who uncovered that there were some sounds Vinnie Vincent had laid down that actually had ended up on Revenge, like the opening feedback to...
Unholy?
Unholy, yeah. It was Vinnie, right, Mitch?
Yeah, that was discussed. I think with my interview with Bruce in that series of Revenge interviews, and Brave Words ran those if people want to Google it. And the rumor was that Vinny had played all of Unholy, and Bruce said, BS to that. He said, if anything, he did the scratching at the beginning, but nothing else. So, you know, hey, little... Vinny Minutia for you.
Yeah. Hey, I got a question for you, Mitch. I always and I love. Let me say, I love Bruce Kulick. He's one of the greatest guitarists I know. One of the greatest people I know. And so this is absolutely not any kind of a slight. I always thought that part of the lead in Card Jam sounded like Ace playing. What did you think?
I thought that too. And you know, Ace did do a version with Eric way back when, but right. According to Bruce, they re-recorded it and they just had Bruce basically copy the licks and play it note for note, much like right. on what was it, Kiss Forever or whatever it was. Eric Singer had done all those Hot in the Shade demos, and then Eric Carr just came in and redid
right.
them.
Redid them, yeah.
I had asked Bruce about that too, and I said, well, even the rhythm, because even the rhythm sounded like it could have potentially been Ace, and he said, yeah, it was re-recorded, but it does have a different sound about it, you know, that yeah. song. It doesn't really fit in sonically with the rest of the record, and I wondered maybe even if there was some bleed through like on the drum mics, if Ace had actually jammed that with Eric, maybe there could have been a little bleed through, and maybe technically there is some Ace left somewhere yeah. on that right. song on Revenge. It's possible.
Yeah, you never
that's
know.
Very possible, because you're right, especially if they're doing it as a jam and not really a recording session. When you're doing just a jam, you're not really dialing in and checking for bleed and cymbal bleed. You're just, if fans don't understand what bleed is when the music sort of spreads through the different mics and stuff. They could have, and then it could have just, that's hard to remove, especially in 1992 with the technology available. Right. It would have been impossible to remove. So anything's possible in Kiss world. You know, listen, I found out that Tommy Thayer played on two songs on Hot in the Shade. You know, nobody knew that
wow.
before.
Right.
James.
What?
Jamie St. James
did background vocals on right. Revenge.
Hey, so, Mitch, I gotta just while we're talking about Hot in the Shade and Tommy, I gotta say that one of my favorite lyrics in the entire world, and only Kiss fans, hardcore Kiss fans, are gonna get this. It's the law of the jungle. If you've got the hunger, or if you got the hunger,
that's
a great right? line. Yeah, Betrayed, and Tommy, of course, co-wrote that tune, and that always reminded me of like a Deuce type of a beat, and of course it is a similar drum beat, and I always love that tune, and till this day, I walk down the street going, it's the law of the jungle if you've got the hunger. I don't know why I do that, but I do. Like, it's weird, but I do.
It's like, no, the line you should remember is from Animalize, where it's, I'll put my log in your fire, baby,
oh,
whatever,
yeah,
from
absolutely.
That stupid Burn, yeah. Bitch, Burn song. Oh, my God. But hey, listen, Tommy, if you really think about it, Black and Blue did a song, and the name escapes me, but
Nasty,
King
Nasty,
Domino.
I think.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was Nasty Nasty, but that bon, da, 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 da,
oh, the song
da,
sounds
da,
exactly the same.
It's the exact riff. I mean, the same exact thing.
Yeah, and I guess Gene sort of went, hey, I'll take that.
Right.
And apparently, Tommy didn't complain too much because all these years later, he's in the band. So it was good to keep his mouth shut and go, oh, okay, you can have that,
boss. Cool.
No problem.
Yeah.
good job. Yeah, I mean, you know, what a great band. And there's been so many ghost musicians. I don't know if they know who played on what, quite frankly.
Yeah, I think that a lot of that is actually true, is that, like, they don't remember exactly who did what on all of the records from, you know, 1974 until now. And I still, even today, and this is going to show my insane Kiss geekdom, I still swear that really sounds like Gene at the beginning of Detroit Rock City, and not Bob Ezrin. But they've asked Bob Ezrin that, and they've asked Gene that, and they both say it's Bob Ezrin. But to me, it sounds like Gene.
Yeah. By the way, if you remember when I said that Bob Ezrin broke up Kiss, did you see the latest Guitar World interview where they asked Gene when Kiss started falling apart, and he said when Bob Ezrin.
Wow. I just got that, but I haven't read the whole thing yet.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I called it, boys and girls. Yeah,
that is
good.
Yeah,
Bob, you know, and I just did a song with Dick Wagner, and it's going to be released in May, and it's all Kiss-related, and I'll give you more details. I'm sort of keeping a lid on what this is, but I'll tell you all about it. But I got Dick to recreate some of his greatest Kiss moments.
Nice.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah, for May 3rd release is what we're looking at, I believe. Yeah.
All right. And where will we go to hear and see this?
Ah, well, when it comes out, it's going to go straight to iTunes. So coming in May, okay. some new Dick Wagner doing some Kiss.
And speaking of iTunes, A World with Heroes is up on iTunes, right? You can still go buy those tracks.
Yeah, absolutely. On iTunes, I did something incredible. I did 11 bonus tracks. If you bought the CD, you got 40 songs. If you go to iTunes, you get 51 songs. And I also repurposed some of them just, you know, so people could have samplers. I did a best of the 80s, you know, of all those tribute songs. It's the exact same songs. It's just repackaged where you get like 15 songs for 10 bucks. The money still goes to charity. And coming March 8th, on my wife's birthday, I'm doing a best of the 70s of those. It's just a repurposing. They're not new tracks. They've not been tinkered with. If you have them already, there's nothing to go get. But it's just so that if you want, you know, 15 of the favorite 70s songs redone on this tribute, you can go get it for a nice cheap price. I think it's like $10.99 or $11.99. And every single penny from these songs, from now till the end of time, will keep going to that palliative care home. Regardless of how I repackage or repurpose, that's what the money's for, and that's what their tracks are for.
Very cool. What a great cause, and all of the listeners should do their part and go pick up at least one of these collections. If you can't do the entire 50 some songs, get one of these smaller collections, and it's all going to be cool, and it's all for a great cause. So
yeah, and if they want one of the CDs, I've literally got 30 left as of today. I had 1,000. They're all gone except for this one. I found a box hidden behind in the closet, and it has like 30 CDs left. And, you know, people can get in touch with me through my
Facebook. The CD is great. I actually bought the CD, and, it, you know, to have the booklet and just the physical CD that you can throw in your car or whatever is always nice. I wanted to quickly mention a couple of the songs off the CDs. A song called Back on the Streets, which you have a version of Richie Scarlett doing it with John Regan and Todd Howarth, which is really good. But let's talk about that coming together and also some of the other versions of this song that kind of exist in the Kiss universe. Let's start with your version on A World with Heroes. How did you get these three guys together to record this?
Well, that's what we call studio magic. You know, I got in touch with Doug Snazzle, who had put together the tribute album Return of the Comet, which I had worked on as well, right. Actually.
Right. I remember you, Mitch, from back in those days. That's when I first, like, became acquainted with you.
Yeah, back in 96, 97. I'm always the go-to guy. I'm the guy who goes, gets all these musicians. That's what I'm good at. And Doug had come to me and said, I had this project, and I said, I'll get you the people. And so I did. And we had done Back on the Streets for that album. And then this year, I called him up, and I said, can I use a couple of these songs because they're not available anywhere? They're not on iTunes and all that. And he said, yeah, go ahead. And then I thought to myself, well, if I just take a song that already exists and put it out as a bonus track, is it really a bonus track, you know? And so I called Todd and I said, listen to these two songs, I'm an Animal and Back on the Streets. Can you do something? And so he took them into the studio, threw them up on the rack, and recorded brand new backing vocals. And I think added a little bit of guitar or keyboard to them to beef it up. And so it's basically the Return of the Comet track with a brand new layered BV track over it.
Nice.
Studio magic. Cool. But yeah, it sounds great.
It sounds great. I love that version of it. But let's talk about some of the other versions. The first time I think I heard this song, maybe it was the second time, because it was on the first Vinnie Vincent record. But then I remember I had this cassette that I had bought at a record swap in the Chicago suburbs of an Ace concert, I believe in New York. And Ace had played the song. And so that's just kind of weird because Vinny wrote the song, right?
Right. Yeah, but I mean, back in the day, and maybe John can correct me, a lot of people were submitting stuff to Ace for consideration. I mean, Paul had submitted Hide Your Heart, and, you know, Ace was going around picking up all these different songs to try to find a song that fit him. And, you know, Back on the Streets, listen, Europe recorded a version. Right. I think Kiss might have even tried a demo version of it. So, you know, it was
Vinnie
a song.
Vincent in one of those Kiss official Kiss books. Vinnie Vincent says that there is a Kiss version with Paul singing lead.
Right. And he did his own version. So, you know, it's just the way it goes. You write a song and you try to get people to record it, make some money on it. But
that's actually John Norum.
Sorry.
John, and John was, of course, the guitarist of Europe.
Of your,
I'm getting old. I forget.
Just trying to help.
No, but it's. By the way, John Norum's version is absolutely fantastic too.
You know what? I don't think I've ever actually heard that, but I've always remembered that he did do that song, similar to Hide Your Heart, where there was the Ace version, there was the Kiss version, there was the Bonnie Tyler version,
the Molly Hatchet.
Yeah, Molly Hatchet did a version, which I don't even remember that one, but.
Oh, I have that on CD.
That's very cool. I used to have, and this is a funny thing, a promo cassette with a green insert. It was the Bonnie Tyler version. That was
nice. I bought the actual Bonnie Tyler album and the Molly Hatchet album. I had to have, you know, that was part of my collecting back in the day. I'm not really a merchandise guy. I know on Three Sides I show a whole bunch of merchandise, but that's my girlfriends or my wife or my girlfriend at the time, I should say, or my mom or somebody who buys them as
your
gifts.
You've got a wife, a family, you've got a girlfriend.
No, but it was always somebody buying me that stuff. But what I always was the music. And so I would track down every single Kiss cover. So I have 600 Kiss CDs, but 499 of them are different bands doing Kiss covers.
I got to tell you this, Mitch, and I'm sure you have this too. I have the Paul Dean promo CD of Sword and Stone.
Yes, isn't that great?
Isn't that cool? Yeah. And guys, if you don't know who Paul Dean is, he's from Loverboy, the guitarist, right?
Cool. Great band.
Well, Mitch, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to wrap things up, but to take us out, I'd love to play off of the World with Heroes CD, the Bumblefoot, Rex Brown, Brian Tichy version of Detroit Rock City. I mean, this just sonically sounds so amazing.
Yeah, and can I give you a quick story on that? 2 seconds.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bumblefoot was one of the first artists I contacted to do this. In fact, he was in that first batch of like 4 emails or 5 emails that went out. Not only did he answer me the same day, he sent me a finished demo version of it the same day.
That is nuts.
Bumblefoot, you asked me about interviews.
Oh, yeah, he's amazing.
He is the world. I mean, you probably just were with him at that Eddie Trunk show, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He is the world's nicest guy. I mean, he is not a rock star attitude at all. He is just a decent human being. And he went, yeah, it's for your dad, your father-in-law's cancer thing. Done.
Wow.
You know?
Unbelievable.
And then I got Rex Brown to play on it. And then I got Brian Tichy to play on it. And they just made it this big, huge thing. But no ego. 24 hours later, it was all done.
So wow, that's
good for him.
Amazing, but
it's great.
Yeah, and I'm glad you enjoy it. And you know, check out the album and wait for May. There's a little something special coming in May.
Okay,
I always keep busy. I'll tell you off air.
Cool.
So there you go.
Mitch, well, thanks so much for taking the time to come on our show tonight, and we really appreciate it, and it was a great conversation. I couldn't help myself. I wanted to jump in and chime in because I was having so much fun, so thank you again, and let's definitely keep in touch for sure.
Yeah, listen, I'll come on anytime. Listen, I got plenty of free time.
Good deal.
You know, so there you go. Well, thank you.
Okay, best of luck to you, Mitch, and we'll definitely touch base soon.
Great. Thanks, Mark.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
We go with a little Detroit Rock City off of A World with Heroes.
Everybody's gonna move their feet.
That was Detroit Rock City featuring Brian Fitchy, Rex Brown, and Bumblefoot coming off of A World with Heroes. Like Mark, I have that on CD as nice. Well, and I did go out on iTunes and bought the additional 11 tracks because, like most of us here tonight, we're all Kiss freaks, so yeah. Not.
Yeah, well, it was good to talk with Mitch. And,
yeah, very good guy.
Yeah, great guy, and, you know, he didn't really slam the other guys too hard. Basically, what we got out of the interview with Mitch is that he wanted to do more interviews with Three Sides of the Coin, and Michael and Tommy did not. At least that's what I got out of the interview. They wanted to make it more of a just a show where fans talk about Kiss. And Mitch thought the show would be more interesting having people on and interviewing other people. So right. I guess it'll be interesting to see if the podcast actually continues without Mitch.
Right. Again, if they're going to get a new guy or just do it with two people.
Yeah, which hopefully if they do it with two people, they will change the name to Two Sides of the Coin, which would make more sense because that's...
the name of the Ace song.
Yeah, the name of the Ace song, right. It could work, right?
Could work.
Cool.
I always think they should have been a little cooler to Ace. I'm joking. I'm just kidding. Since the title came from that.
Well, you know, opinionated guys. You know, that guy Chris, who has his... Chris from the Decibel Geek podcast said something... I think he said it on the Talking Metal digital stream actually last week, Victor. He said something to you, I think, about, you know, there's certain things you have to be careful when you talk about them, religion, politics, and now Kiss, because, you know, people get so worked up and fired up about this and that, and, you know, it's you know, the main thing that shows is that, you know, if we didn't love Kiss so much, you know, I know there's the people that hate Tommy. There's the people that think Kiss is doing the right thing, not having Ace and Peter in the band. There's all people, you know, people think Vinnie Vincent is the greatest thing that ever happened to Kiss. There's all these different opinions going around. But I think the thing that we can say about all of us as Kiss fans is we all love Kiss. And right. If we didn't love Kiss so much, we wouldn't get so worked up over somebody saying this or that. And you know, it's when somebody calls somebody you love a name, you get mad, you know. And when somebody calls somebody you don't know or don't care about a name, you could care less. But so I think it's just a testament to this great band that, you know, Ace, Peter, Paul, and Gene built, you know, back in the 70s, and that people like Bruce Kulick continued to help fly the flag for in the 80s and 90s, and now we have you know, people like Tommy in the band, and I think, you know, for me personally, I just love them all, and a big tip of the hat to them all, and we can argue different stuff back and forth all day long, but the main thing is that this is just such a great special band to all of us, and that's right. Why we're all so passionate about it.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. And Mark, you were one of the only people that I know who actually ever spoke to Vinny, and you did you talked to him on one of those Rockline type shows.
And I've been trying. It was actually RPM, Real Precious Metal, with Scott Loftus, a local show in the Chicagoland area, and I spoke with him off air and on air on that show. He and Dana Strum were doing press for the first record, the first Invasion record, and a handful of the interviews that Scott Loftus did on this radio station RPM back in the day have ended up on YouTube, like the one with Metallica, Lars, and Cliff, and I think it's actually the whole band, is which I remembered hearing live because I had been at the Metallica concert. It was when they opened for Ozzy, and when I got home from the concert, I turned on the radio and Metallica were on air live with Scott Loftus. I've looked for the Vinnie Vincent one, but it hasn't surfaced, which it's so funny. You know, now everything is recorded and, you know, on demand and stuff. But back in the day, there were certain stuff that, you know, on television and radio that was just kind of, it went out over the air and no one bothered to record
it.
That was
not
it.
Not even the stations. Not even the stations.
Yeah. And if the stations did, they threw it out, you know, at some point.
Look at Live Aid. They did that with Live Aid, actually, where the show in Philly was originally thrown out or about to be thrown out, and they rescued it like the last second before the DVD set came out.
That's crazy.
And that's, you know, that important.
Hey, you know what, Mark? We've never done this on a show yet, but you got to remind me. I've got to find these cassettes back in my parents' house where I called into a Boston radio show that was very similar to the one you talked to Vinny on, and I talked to Paul and Gene, believe it or not. Like, this had to be in the, you know, 80s, like late 80s. So we got to find that. Figure out how to transfer a cassette to something digital and maybe play that.
That would be great. That would be great.
Yeah, really fun. But.
Cool. All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up. Do you have that Ghost song on tap there, Victor?
Absolutely.
This is a band that, John, you really should get into. I think you'd like them.
Yeah, I just love the whole vibe of what they are. I was telling a coworker of mine who's, you know, not into metal, because we were walking down the street in Times Square, and on the billboard for the Nokia Theater, it said Ghost, and I said, this is how I described them. I said, they're these guys, they're like ghouls. I said, they you don't know what they look like. I said, the singer is like a skeleton pope or something like that. And I said, but I think he recently went somewhere and did some kind of thing without the makeup, or with, you
yeah,
know,
but
the
even
costume.
That when he did the thing without the makeup, even that was a disguise. That's not what he really looks like. He was like dressed up like this old guy. But by the way, Emily and I are going. We're supposed to go to that show at Nokia, and now she can't go. But so I might have an extra ticket if you want to go.
Oh yeah, I'll buy it off of you. Yeah, when is it? Do you know?
It's like in May, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, let me know and I'll buy the ticket off you.
Yeah, it was like $30. So
cool.
Yeah.
Perfect.
All right.
Do you think they switched singers, Mark?
I don't know. It's really hard to say because I read somewhere that on the first record it was, you know, I think it's listed as a different singer, and the guy on the second record has that two after his name. But the voices on the two records sound pretty similar to me, but maybe a little different. I don't know. I really don't know.
Wow.
The one theory that I have, and before making this a long-winded conversation, since everyone is under a mask, what are the chances are or of the band, actually their whole thing from the beginning is to rotate, you know, who sings or who's playing what, because you never know. The original singer supposedly was the guitarist in some Swedish death metal band, so he can play guitar. So maybe he's one of the guitarist or bass players now, and they just swap spots.
Different guys. That's really funny. Believe it or not, this is totally not metal, but when I came home from college one year, I played in a lounge band that played songs like Girl from Ipanema, and I was a keyboard player. And the band was called Clap Hands, Here Comes Charlie. And I didn't, it was like a 70s thing, but this was in the 80s, of course. And there was an A group and the B group, so the lead guy in the band would book the same band in two separate gigs on the same night. So sometimes you'd get the A band and sometimes you'd get the B band, and it was just a rotating group of people. And so maybe that's what Ghost is doing.
Could be. I don't think so, but it could be. You never know.
Right.
There's one of the guitar players I thought was used to be in Crash Diet. It was one rumor I read, but kind of a glammy Scandinavian hard rock metal band. But who knows the truth? Anyways, all we do know is that the music is great and the band is Ghost. Let's wrap things up here with the song Year Zero.